Radio EcoShock.
What is the answer to giant power companies with equally giant greenhouse gas emissions? Citizens doing it for themselves. One of the best examples is co-op power in New England. We'll find out what it is and how this could work in your community from Lynn Benander. She's the CEO of Co-op Power and Northeast Biodiesel. From Massachusetts, Lynn, a warm welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Very nice to join you today.
Why don't we start with Co-op Power? What is that?
Co-op Power is a decentralized network of community energy cooperatives serving Massachusetts and southern Vermont. And we help people build community ownership of energy solutions in their community that they're really looking to help them get off of fossil fuels, reduce their energy costs, and build their local economies.
Well, many of us would like to get something like this started. Can you tell us, how did Co-op Power get off the ground?
There were many similar efforts that kind of were small streams that contributed to what we're doing. And I think the first impetus for our creation came from someone working for the Department of Public Utilities in the state of Vermont. And they were looking out for consumers and said, you know, the electric industry is deregulating, and in Massachusetts, we don't have many municipally owned energy companies. We don't have any rural electric cooperatives that serve most of the rest of the United States. And so there isn't a real consumer voice in Massachusetts, and not as much either in Vermont. So he was concerned that consumers were going to need more representation as the energy industry changed, and asked us to work together to create local solutions for communities related to the energy industry.
When I heard about this, my first reaction was to picture a group of middle-class white folks getting together to bypass the system and save a few bucks. Your website suggests something quite different. Who is participating?
Yeah, we're a multi-class and multi-race cooperative. In some of our early meetings, our business planning meetings often included a couple hundred people, and we were presenting each option as we went along. And one of the options that was presented was doing solar electric installations on the roof of our members' homes. And as we were discussing that proposal, there was kind of a rumble in the room, and I was facilitating and kind of was looking around trying to figure out what was the dis-ease that was building. And when I asked, I said, it seems like some people are uncomfortable with us talking about this proposal. What's happening? And some people stood up and said, this is just solutions for wealthy people on their homes. And if you don't own a home, you can't access. And we thought Co-op Power was going to be here for us, including renters and people with limited income. And so they said, you know, we don't really want Co-op Power focusing on this particular product and services. We want Co-op Power focusing on things that are more accessible across income, across different kinds of communities. And the rest of the members resonated with that. And we made a much more focused commitment to making sure that what we do is available to everybody.
The banks aren't known for being super friendly to people who want to do things for themselves. How did you get around that?
We've raised a lot of money from our members. When people saw something they wanted to see happen, they would invest in it together. One of our members, for example, lent money to a church in a low-income community in Boston so that that church could do energy efficiency upgrades and, you know, get paid back. The church has paid back our member over time. So we've had partnerships between our members and people that wanted to get good stuff done on their buildings, on their homes. And we've also had people volunteer, so we get 15 people that can go out and put up a solar hot water system on somebody's house with volunteer labor, and if you help 4 people do it, then they'll come help you do it on your house. So we are able to leverage that kind of community support to get the costs way down.
In your experience, are people less likely to default on community-financed projects?
Funny, that's not really a word in our vocabulary. We're working together to make things happen, and there's a movement in the United States called the slow money movement, and it's really about patient capital that's very committed to building local economies, to building local food solutions, and I would say we're part of that slow money movement building local energy solutions. And so the payment terms aren't always on time, but there's a full commitment to making things whole over time.
Lynn Benander, could you tell us about your experience in helping set up individual entrepreneurs, say in solar or whatever, versus getting other co-ops going?
We've helped 6 companies get started as solar installation businesses. That's been an interesting experience for us. One of the first projects we worked on was helping an employee-owned cooperative get started in building mostly solar electric systems. They've done some solar hot water. Their name is PV Squared, and we helped write their first business plan and get first grants in for them. They've grown so much over the last 10 years, and they're very highly respected in the field, and they're the installer that we've chosen to build our first community shared solar project. We're really proud of them and all that they've accomplished, and we're so delighted that they're still around to help us to do good work in the world, to partner with us. We've also helped individuals start solar installation businesses, and most of those have sold off to other businesses, and they're not available to us anymore. And then there's one exception, Renewed by the Sun in Turner's Falls, has continued to provide support for us.
So as I understand it, there's sort of subgroups of co-ops that work with Co-op Power. Could you explain how that works and maybe tell us how many people work with Co-op Power and then how many employees the whole group of co-ops might employ, if you know?
Yes, Co-op Power is one cooperative. We have 30 staff people that work out of 2 locations, one in the Boston area, connected to the Boston Metro East Community Energy Co-op, and one in Hatfield, Massachusetts, that's connected to the Hamden Community Energy Co-op, Franklin Community Energy Co-op, and Hampshire Community Energy Co-op. And those 2 locations provide energy efficiency services to 30 to 40 homes a week, as well as a whole range of all the other products and services that we offer. But most of our staff work in the energy efficiency division.
And what pays off fastest in New England? Is it solar electricity or solar hot water heaters? And also, I want to know, is it possible for solar hot water heaters to still work in cold New England winters?
Solar hot water is a great solution here in New England. And if there were not public subsidies, solar hot water would be by far the best investment, because there's quite a lot of money, especially in Massachusetts, but also in Vermont, incentives that encourage people to build solar electric systems. Those are also quite cost effective. But the best investment for anybody, anytime, is in energy efficiency. That's where you're going to get the biggest bang for every dollar you spend to air seal it and insulate it so that it uses a lot less energy for both heating and cooling.
Let's move on, Lynn, to biodiesel. What is Northeast Biodiesel?
Northeast Biodiesel is a project that was initiated by our Franklin and Hampshire community energy cooperatives about 10 years ago. And it's actually a manufacturing plant that's going to be launching next month that will make 1.75 million gallons a year of biodiesel that we can use in our oil heat systems and diesel engines. And it's the biodiesel that we're making is made from recycled cooking oil from restaurants and cafeterias and food processing centers.
Right, because biodiesel got a terrible name as a false solution, I think, when industrialized agriculture switched from growing food to making heavily subsidized gas substitutes. So I guess this is quite different from that.
It is, and yet that whole process, the public perception process that biodiesel went through when it was connected more with virgin soy biodiesel and ethanol, that whole transformation in the industry where biofuels were sexy and hot and everybody wanted to be a part of that revolution, and then all of a sudden, you know, we were on the most wanted list, and people were very confused about what was good and what wasn't good. And the kind of biodiesel we've been working to produce from the beginning is a very positive environmental contribution. It's the only way that tractors and construction vehicles and trucks and buses can move with clean fuel. And so we have these large diesel vehicles, and this is the best fuel for them to use as we're transitioning off of fossil fuels and into a cleaner economy that burns 86% cleaner than diesel fuel. So reducing our carbon emissions and particulate emissions is a very important part of our transition to a cleaner economy. I got a chance to hear Mary Powell from Green Mountain Power speak. So she runs a utility in southern Vermont. She was such a breath of fresh air. She's talking about what the utility of the future looks like. She's working in a small town of Rutland, Vermont, looking at how to take that very limited resource community off the grid. I think there are visionaries within the utilities that are looking at what it means now with the development of distributed generation, what kinds of possibilities are available for really improving the lives of people in our communities.
So, Lynn, does your work with Positive Solutions help you deal with worries about climate change and our future?
Absolutely. I remember when my children were small, I read a study about whether children were afraid of nuclear holocaust. When I was a kid, I had to sit underneath my desk, you know, during these little drills where we were taught what to do if there was a nuclear bomb that fell near us. And there was a study that showed that if the children's parents were working for solutions for a more peaceful way of settling our conflicts and looking for ways to get rid of the nuclear weapons, that those children whose parents were involved in those were more hopeful. And I made a commitment to my own children to be involved in creating positive solutions, because I think having hope is one of the things that helps us keep our humanity. And when we lose hope, we end up doing things that really compromise ourselves and our communities.
Well, I realize this whole project has been many years in the making, but if you could speak to some of our listeners who say, yeah, I want co-op power in my community, are there two or three steps that they can start to get the ball rolling?
So on our website, which is co-oppower.coop, there's a section that says bring co-op power to your community that describes how you might go about doing that. And if you're in a community in New England or New York, we would be glad to talk with you about partnering with you to help create a community energy co-op. And if you're outside of New England or New York, we're also very happy to share the resources that we have on our website. We try to make many things available. There's also a lot of groups that we're connected to around the country and in other parts of the world that are working on very similar things, and we've got some of those links on our website, and we're also glad to share, you know, to talk more with people too, especially by email. That's the best way to get in touch with us.
So we've been talking with Lynn Benander, the CEO of Co-op Power and Northeast Biodiesel in New England. Find out more at coppower.coop. And you can find links to Lynn and everything we've talked about in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Thank you so much, Lynn. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much for having us on.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.